This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 771, brought to you by Macroverse, the next generation comics and webtoon. Download the app at www.macroverse.com. And iFanboy listeners just like you, who are all doing the right thing out there, taking care of the people through this time. We're pretty close to getting through it, I think. Good job. I keep my hands on myself. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 771. I like sevens. I like sevens in sequence, probably because of when I was born. My name is, I'm 22777. My name is Josh Flanagan. You know my birthday. And this is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
It's not hard to figure out his birthday, but I'm going to make it easier to hack him. I don't want to do that.
This is the 1 year week of the lockdown. And I suspect, we've been making a joke for a while, but this is actually the 1 year week. And I suspect that if you go back a year, that show was weird. But I don't know. I felt like it was 10 years ago. I couldn't even tell you what
happened. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the, this will be a couple of weeks.
I suspect there was a nervous show.
Yes. Yeah. This will be a couple of weeks. I never believed that because you send a lot of articles that made me understand, oh, this is, school's not coming back in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. No.
But here we are, still standing, like Elton John.
Or sitting.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Because we're tired.
Button on my desk. We are iFanboy, and we have to talk about comics. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Every week we read them, the ones that come out. We don't read all of them, because that would be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pick one that we like the best. We call that the pick of the week, which is sometimes absurd. And we talk about the other books. We talk about that one. We will talk about a patron pick. We will answer listener mail if we have time. We will distract and enjoy ourselves. And then hopefully that will move along to you and a community of happiness erupts.
This is a selfish endeavor.
I mean, obviously, it's an ego-based...
We're just trying to help ourselves. It's our own little therapy session every week. And then hopefully, by extension, you.
At least we understand, like, well, if you point this outward, it might help some other people, too.
Exactly.
There you go. There's a spoiler warning. You're going to learn too much about us. So that's your spoiler. Also, things that happen in the books, because we have to talk about them. Connor, you had the pick.
I did. This was a week where my pull list kept growing. I think by the end of it, I had 20 books. I started out with like 13 or 14, and then I just kept adding things. And by the end, it was 20 books. It was a pretty hefty week. And the pick of the week ended up being Wonder Woman 770. Gotta love that original numbering. Written by Michael W. Conrad and Becky Cloonan. Art by Travis Moore. Colors Tamara Bonvillon. I don't know if it's French like that, but that's how I like to say it.
That's pretty good.
And Pat Brousseau. This is the first issue of the new Infinite Frontier Wonder Woman. So you can see on the cover the new logos for the new Infinite Frontier versions of these characters, or the new continuity, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I was actually wasn't sure if I was originally going to pick this up because I wasn't sure what was going on with Wonder Woman. You know, she was central to the death metal story, and therefore the, what was it? What was the name of that stupid Future State? I wasn't sure. But then I saw the cover, and it was Diana with a bunch of Vikings. I thought, well, that's interesting. And I saw the names of the creators, and I really love Travis Moore. He's one of my favorite new artists. He makes everyone really pretty, which is nice, because that's escapism, and I want everyone to be really pretty, the men and the women. So the story of this is that Diana is, well, she's Marvel adjacent. She's in the afterlife of Asgard. She's in Valhalla, and she has clearly died, and she is now in the infinite loop of fighting and drinking and banging and feasting.
They very clearly said that they did not bang.
No, but I assume other people are in Valhalla. So that's
not in this version of DC. We don't do that.
So she has somehow died and woken up in Valhalla, and she's made a friend, a very handsome friend with long hair, Sigur.
Siggy Piggy.
He is introducing her to the life in Valhalla, in which they fight every day in preparation for Ragnarok, and then at night they feast and drink, and other people bang, but not them. Slowly, it starts to dawn on her that this is weird, and there's a talking squirrel with a horn who's telling her that the world tree Yggdrasil is dying. This is basically a Thor comic. Thor even shows up at some point.
I mean, my thought was, I was like, that was really a fun read, and I enjoyed it. It had nothing to do with Wonder Woman, but, you know, good issue.
To me, like, here's the thing with Wonder Woman. I'm constantly trying the new Wonder Woman reboots, because I love Wonder Woman as a character. I just hate the Greek gods stuff, which is, because that's hard, because that's Wonder Woman. But taking her out of that realm and putting her into the Asgardian realm is interesting, because it's different. You know, it still keeps the idea of her being in the pantheon of the gods, but it puts her in a different, more fun god realm than just the dreary Greek god stuff, which I just don't care
about.
The
Greek gods are kind of a bummer, aren't they?
Yeah. These gods are more fun. These are party gods.
The thing is, like, none of these Wonder Woman reboots over the years have given a fun superhero in the DC universe Wonder Woman. None of them.
They tried the last one, the most recent one with Mariko Tamaki, where they had her fight Max Lord, and that storyline was just dull and stupid.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
They've tried it, but, like, it just, no one seems to be able to do it. And right. They're good people. Good people have been on this stuff, and it's like the impossible riddle. I'm just trying to think of some, you know, it's like fusion. Mm-hmm. No one can crack it. And so they do this other thing where it's moving over and like, well, let's do mythology stuff. And one of the things that I find really, I'm trying not to say interesting, but I've noticed, like, there's some zeitgeisty Norse mythology thing going on right now. And, you know, like, there's Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I was playing a lot. Until I reached a game-breaking bug, and now I just have to stop until they fix it anyway. But, like, that's all in that. There's the Norse mythology. I can't say Norse mythology. That's a fun new speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
Over at Dark Horse, there's obviously the Thor comics.
Yeah, there's a lot of Norse.
What's going on with that? I can't even relate that. I was like, well, what is that? What's that connected to the world? I don't know, but it's evident everywhere now, which is weird.
I don't know. The Viking show was very popular for many years.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, just ended a couple, or I don't know if it actually ended or not. I stopped.
Is this the new thing? Like, after zombies, it's just going to be all Valhalla and shit?
I think that's great. So, to me, this was just like, wow, this is terrifically fun and interesting and unusual for a Wonder Woman comic. I love the Travis Moore art. I think there's an interesting, you know, mystery here. She doesn't really belong there. She doesn't have her powers in Valhalla. She tries to fly. She can't fly. She's not strong. It's interesting, and I like what's happening here in terms of, okay, if you're going to reboot and do something interesting and different, this is interesting and different, and I'm looking forward to more of it. And hopefully it stays that way. I don't want her to just, you know, recreate Thor here. And Thor's here in the background, and he's much more of your traditional Norse Thor than the comic Thor.
Big, dumb brute.
I don't need him to be a character, necessarily, but... You know, this is a different take on Wonder Woman, and I enjoyed it. There was a backup story that was much more YA-focused that I didn't love as much. Jordy Blair wrote it. Paulina Gana Chow drew it. And it was really well-drawn and everything, but wasn't as
I think it's interesting to put two things in there that are so sort of have such divergent audiences.
Yeah.
Like, the kid who's going to read that story isn't the adult. Yeah, I'm going to say the adult who's going to read, or, you know, young adult who's going to read the first part. Or vice versa. And I think that's a weird thing. Like, you're going to read half your Wonder Woman comic and then give it to your kid.
I guess.
Like,
maybe.
Don't read the first part, or go ahead and read the first part. But it's weird. It is then. It means that the cute cartoon stuff is really being made for adults.
Like, maybe.
Who like that stuff.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. So, I mean, this is obviously not going to stay this way. She's not going to stay in Asgard with these gods. This is going to be resolved within this arc. But for now, I was like, oh, that's fun.
No, this is it, man.
Putting her in this situation is interesting and different and fun. And it looked terrific. And I laughed a few times. It was nice to see her relax a little bit. You know, she sort of leans into it. I'm at the feast. I'm going to arm wrestle this dude. I'm going to sing songs. I'm going to make out with this other dude. I'm going to drink mead.
It's like she's in a Starro thing, but her version of it. Right. She's very happy. Everything's good.
She's having a good time, even though she knows that things are not right here. And she knows that she used to be somebody else with powers. And this talking squirrel with the horn is telling her things are screwed up. And she's got to save the world tree. I was really not expecting this, and I had a really good time reading it. And it was a lot of fun. That's the worry with these reboots. You know, I hated Batman. I hate that whole reboot. But this has been fun, and they're all coming now. And so it's going to be interesting to see what's going on.
The way that I guess this is a spoiler, and we'll talk about the Talksplode that will be available when you hear this show. It will actually be behind it. But the way that I understand it now, because I asked directly, this sort of new relaunch or whatever version of DC that we're in now, it's like, let the books go do the thing in their books,
yeah,
on their own, and don't worry about all that other stuff. To it, we'll see how long it gets stuck with.
There's an infinite frontier of stories to tell, Josh.
Yeah. So, you know, that sounds like this is sort of this is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Like, we do this book over here. I'm not going to worry what Batman's doing over there, or, you know, Metal, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, I had fun with it.
I didn't mind it. I didn't like love it, but
would you read more of it?
Maybe. I hadn't really considered it. I was like, I'll read this for the show because I think it'll make a better conversation. And I kind of enjoyed it. And that's as far as I went. So Let's see.
We had another Infinite Frontier release this week. Superman 29, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson. Art by Phil Hester with Eric Gapster on his inks and Hi-Fi and Dave Sharp. So Philip Kennedy Johnson did a really actually terrific, we talked about it while you were gone, Superman issue of Future State? Fuck, I've already forgotten everything. House of L. It was a one-shot, oversized one-shot, and it was really good about Superman's family in the future. So he's the new writer here. He wrote that Last God fantasy comic that you
talked about
at one point.
I read one or two issues of it and then didn't.
Jonathan's back with his father. His father is in the traditional suit. Jonathan's still, for some reason, in the terrible, you know, overly designed Superboy costume.
I don't mind it because it's not on Superman.
No, I know, but it's also like,
yeah,
there's a shot at the beginning. It's the opening two-page spread with the title card on it. And like, Superman's all clean and classic, and Superboy is just like, he's got all these things on his arms. And
have you been around kids? That's what would happen.
That's true. The 90s are back with the kids, so he's like full 90s.
Just like, you know, those are his version of tattoo sleeves.
So interesting, you know, we talked about Phil Hester. He's been drawing the family tree over an Image, and he was a big deal in the 2000s with Green Arrow. And we haven't seen much of him, and now he's back and on Superman, which is terrific. I feel like his art, and it's the same team. I looked it up. It's on Family Tree. It's also Eric Gapster inking him.
Oh.
And I think the art over there is better. I feel like they smooth them out. It's chunkier. It feels more like classic Phil Hester over on Family Tree. It's chunkier. It's heavier inks. It's heavier lines. Here, it feels like they've smoothed it out.
He's a horror guy in a bit. I mean, he's a superhero guy too, but a lot of his creator-owned stuff has been horror, and I think that, you know, that's where he fits in. This is like the opposite mission of that.
Right.
You know, is the sort of, you know, it's literally Superman. Superman's the character that they tried to make Jack Kirby draw differently for. Yeah. So, you know, you're trying to fit it in there. That said, you know, like, I really like whenever I see Phil Hester.
Oh, no, I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was interesting that it was slightly, like, I don't want to say sanitized version of him, but it was a slightly less Phil Hester-y version of Phil Hester.
Slightly. It worked. I just like that we're seeing his art more.
Yeah,
you know, for a while it was pretty much everywhere. And you know, at the early 2000s, that was a pretty big stylized leap to do on a mainstream book when he did that Kevin Smith Green Arrow book. And then he did Scott Lang. He did the
Ant-Man.
No, not Scott Lang. No. Yeah, Kirkman's Ant-Man.
Irredeemable Ant-Man?
Yes, he's a great comic book artist, and to see him on like a Superman book was pretty rad. Now, I have a reaction when I see a new Superman or Action Comics issue comes out, and I go, ooh, because I think in my head it's going to be the Superman that I've been reading for the last however many years with Bendis and whatever. And, and then like, I was a little into this and I was like, wait, this isn't that. And I don't know how to feel about it.
Well, number one, we just talked about Wonder Woman getting her original numbering back. Why not give Superman his original numbering back? Why are we 29 here? What's the strategy? I want to know. Someone write it and tell us.
Yeah.
So I'm very much in mixed feelings about this here. So the story here is that these aliens come through a portal in space and Superboy and Superman are battling them back. And there's something about these aliens that can harm Superman. And so they shoot him in the arm and he gets this wound. It doesn't seem to be healing and he's dying. And Superman's going to die.
Yeah.
I don't know if... I mean, hopefully that's not actually what's happening because that would be terrible.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean, but all you know, all comic books are supposed to have that, like, oh no, he's gonna die.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping that's what this is. It's just hard to know, you know. With what
but we don't know. We don't know anything, which is, you know, kind of a strength in its way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there used to be, well, you have no idea what's gonna happen with any of these books. So there's an element of sort of surprise to it, of unexpectedness and mystery. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of nice because it's so unfamiliar, but also kind of like, oh, are you going to screw it up though? So that was the first part. And I could have stopped there. I could have stopped and not done Tales of Metropolis Bibbo. I would have been fine with that.
Oh, right. I totally forgot about Tales of Metropolis Bibbo. Sean Lewis, Sammy Basri. Sammy Basri is a good artist. So I don't know what the point of this is.
It was somebody's going after people that Superman cares about. And so they made Bibbo.
A lizard man and a busty blonde lady with face tattoos are going after Bibbo. Bibbo, beloved sporting character in the Superman world in the 90s and 2000s, who we haven't seen much of lately.
Bartender.
They got away from that world building, I feel like.
Yes.
In the Superman world. Bibbo, Superman's number one fan. Bibbo Bibbowski. Say that three times fast. Bibbo Bibbowski. Bibbo Bibbowski, Superman's number one fan, famously calls him Superman in the old comics, does not do that here, and that feels like a betrayal of Bibbo Bibbowski.
100%. As soon as he said Superman and they spelled it in the word balloon, S-U-P as opposed to S-O-O or possibly more P's, I went, there's no way that this is going to work. And I wasn't wrong. I sent you a text. I was like, this isn't okay.
So, which coming
from honestly,
you,
if you're going to do a, you know, if you're going to, you got to do that's the whole gimmick,
right?
Of the character, that's like
that's his reason for being.
Yes, it literally.
Now, I want to say I did enjoy the first story, even if I'm a little weary of where it's going to go, and I'm only weary because I don't know where anything is going with DC. Like normally, I just be like, oh, this is the cliffhanger. How are they going to save Superman? But I don't know. Maybe they're going to kill him.
I had that thought. I was like, well, maybe this is it.
Hey, you know, it's drama.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy it. I do think Philip Kennedy Johnson seems to have a really good handle on Superman's world. I wouldn't say go back and read it because we're sort of beyond future state now, but the House of El comic was really good. So I'm looking forward to more from him and Superman. I'm just a little hesitant. Also, not a lot happened. It was just basically a big fight. No. And then Superman and Superboy went and talked about Coney Ball for a while.
Yeah, they went and played catch.
Right.
They had a catch.
With pine cones?
Listen, he's alien hybrid.
He's weird.
Yeah.
Did you check out the other Infinite Frontier release, Batman Urban Legends, the Batman anthology book?
What do you think?
70 pages. I assume you did not.
Nope. I didn't even see it, and I saw you put it on the list. And I saw Urban Legends, and I thought, oh, this is going to be one of those anthology
books.
But
here's the deal. Like, yeah. Four stories. Here are the writers. Chip Zdarsky, Stephanie Phillips, Brandon Thomas wrote a terrific Aquaman miniseries for Future State, and Matthew Rosenberg.
It's a good lineup.
It's a real good lineup. Chip Zdarsky doing a Red Hood story, which was terrific. Really terrific. And I don't really like Red Hood stories. Stephanie Phillips did a Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy, sort of sad romance story. Brandon Thomas's Outsiders, I actually really liked it. I was like, oh, Outsiders, I'm not really. But it was actually really, really good. And then Rosenberg doing Grifter. It was super fun. This whole thing was great because of the strength
That's
of
awesome.
The creative team. Eddie Barrows drew the Chip Zdarsky story, Laura Braga, the Harley Quinn story, Max Dunbar, The Outsider story, and Ryan Benjamin. These are all solid people doing these stories, and they were really good.
Because it's Urban Legends, are they just sort of standalone short stories?
No, I mean, they're all part one of whatever.
Okay.
So
what's interesting is that the cover looks like there's a Secret Files book that I got when I was young. And it has this color and that font.
The
Riddler's on the front or something. I don't know. And that this is what that cover reminds me of.
It does. The Anchor story is the Red Hood story. That's one of six. The other stories, I think Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, I think, was just a one-shot. The Outsiders is a three-part story. Grifter's a five-part story. So it's all various lengths.
So is it going to be this book that continues those stories? Is it going to be like a Batman anthology regular series?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would really recommend you go back and check it out because the strength of the creative teams is really good.
What do you think about Grifter being a part of the Batman?
I don't like it. And in that story, I mean, I'm trying not to be negative, but it just doesn't. It's kind of dumb. In the beginning of that story, like there's a whole bunch of the Wildstorm characters like fighting in Gotham, and I was like, this is not okay.
They don't need to be here. That's not adding.
And it's like the dumb ones too. It's like Deathblow and. You know, they're all fighting Death Mr. Freeze. And I was like, I don't know about that.
Fair enough.
I don't think we need to see Grifter fighting Mr. Freeze.
I'm happy to get Grifter. Mm-hmm. And I think that Rosenberg's probably a good guy to do Grifter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe not here.
There's a really smart bit where, it starts off as a flashback where Grifter's brother is Grifter. You know, he was Deadeye or whatever he was. And, you know, they both get really badly hurt and his brother actually dies in the fight. But while they're sort of laying there bleeding, you see Superman and Wonder Woman arrive, and they're just blurs, and then they continue to be blurs, like flying around them. That was kind of a cool way of showing how, as they're sort of laying there, regular people, the blurry heroes are flying around, taking care of everything.
Right.
That was a cool device. And then Grifter becomes Grifter, and then he's now Lucius Fox's bodyguard.
And Lucius Fox is son, and he was also Batwing?
No. Lucius Fox. Morgan Freeman.
Right. Okay. He's still around.
Lucius's son is Batwing and also the next Batman. And I'm not even going to go down this road because I will go off for 25 minutes about how awful this whole thing is.
Is his name also Lucius Fox?
No,
or
it's
is it a different...
Tim Fox and something
else.
There's
another Tim.
He's calling himself Jace. That's the whole controversy in that book.
And so this is Jason and it's Tim. No, let's call him Jason. Yeah, there's still an issue there. There's a clarity. Let's call him Duke. No, listen.
Anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to save my Batman rant for when we talk about a Batman book.
I guess I'm going to have to read it because I want to have context for when that happens.
That deals directly with what's going on. Anyway, let's move on to Rorschach, which I really enjoyed. It was up there for Pick of the Week for a while. We can talk about this again. Not really sure what's going on here, but really enjoying the ride. I thought this device was great. It's the letters back and forth between the two, Laura and Steve Ditko. And we find out a lot about their character through these letters as Columbo keeps investigating the murders. Well, not murders, but their deaths.
I thought it was really good and beautifully drawn. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, like clearly great structure and everything. I didn't love it, though. Like I didn't really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I think it's because I was getting to the point where I think the plot was starting to move forward. At least the mystery was being. And pretty early on. I was like, okay, I get how they get together. And then we had to hang out with them for a bit. And it was like, I think I did something bad. And it's like, okay, it's fine. You did something bad. And it was very paced in a way that I was like, okay, I get it. I want to move on. I want to know what's happening. I don't necessarily want to know these characters better. And again, that's not something wrong that was done. Mm-hmm. It's just I was less interested.
Well, hopefully we do because at the end, Columbo is knocking on a door. And inside the house is a guy in a Rorschach suit watching the debates. So hopefully something is now about to happen.
Yep.
I enjoyed the look back. I think the Ditko character is really interesting. You know, the exploration of pirates as superheroes in this world is interesting. The brief look at him in the sort of sweatshop of making comics in the 40s or 30s is...
Victor Fox's studio? I don't know if that's what Steve Ditko did, but...
It's interesting.
What I always think, though.
I love the page where we watched him draw. We went through the whole process of him doing a drawing from the pencils to the inks. It's an interesting look at comic creation or just creation and madness and what have I devoted my life to? what have I done?
I really want to know if there's like precedent of like some young groupie of Steve Ditko like corresponding with him on paper. Like that would be fascinating. It's not lore or legend I've heard.
And then leading to their murder?
Well, and then they go on an adventure and kill people. I don't think Steve Ditko did that.
I don't know. Maybe he did. Who knows? He was very secretive.
He was famously secretive, so that could have been a thing.
Mm-hmm. There's some strange like conspiracy where it's like Jack Cole and the Ditko character and Frank Miller.
Yeah, that threw me off. I was like, wait, Frank Miller? Like, and honestly, my reaction was like, I don't know what to do with that information. I couldn't qualify it. I couldn't categorize it.
That's like, kind of the fun of this book, where I'm just like, wow, all right, cool. We're halfway through. I'm hoping this all comes together, but for now, it's just
is
like,
it Frank Miller? Frank Miller?
I assume so.
Yeah.
It's the comic world. There are a bunch of comic artists sitting around.
Yeah. But how come Frank Miller and Jack Cole get to be them, and then Steve Ditko has to be Will Meyerson?
Because they had Will Meyerson kill people, probably.
Okay. Fair enough.
I would assume that.
Ditko would be fine with that. He's a Randian. He's... Yeah. Do what you're gonna do.
I liked it a lot. I love the device. As a standalone single issue comic, I really liked the structure of it. I liked, you know, obviously the Jorge Fornes art and the Dave Stewart colors. You know, it's a great looking book.
Yes.
I enjoyed the single issue experience.
Yeah, I can see that.
Let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor of this episode, Macroverse, a new next generation comics and webtoon app that is a universe of adventure. When you download the app for the iOS or Android, not only do you get some of the best curated comics around, but you also get to read them using Macroverse's unique Tap Story format. Thanks to the unique Tap Story, all the comics in Macroverse are custom crafted for your phone, adding the element of time and a page turn between each tap. This means creators can craft the reading experience to create an immersive experience for humor, jump scares, and ultimately avoid from spoiling the story by scanning the page ahead.
And I thought that with the way that the lettering works with that is a really interesting sort of take on, because we're all used to looking at lettering all as a static thing, but mm-hmm. here, like, dialogue pacing and everything works a little differently, making it a little more cinematic. And I thought that's a thing I haven't seen.
It's almost like when, do you remember when Heroes, the TV show, played with subtitles?
Yeah.
You know, up until that point, like, subtitles just came on the screen, and they played with the pacing of them.
Yes.
It's very similar to that, which I think was smart.
I imagine that's pretty fun for the creators to be able to, you know, I'm guessing certain people could really take advantage of something like that.
It's another way of controlling the pace and the storytelling.
Yeah.
Which is good. And it's the way comics would be if they were invented today. If you love comics and webtoons, you'll love it. Macroverse has comics for everyone. Comics for kids, like Rock Mary Rock, for YA audiences like Glitch and Remind, horror with Dead Town and Dame Yaga, and action like Billy Smoke, which is a great title, and Anti. Here are some of our picks from the app that you want to check out. Remind, we talked about it last time. Eisner Award nominated Remind, a Miyazaki-esque tale of a young woman looking for her lost cat, but when he washes up on shore of her sleepy coastal town with a head full of stitches and the startling ability to speak and no memory of how he got that way, her quiet life is forever changed. It's a beautiful looking book.
It's a strong pitch. Who's that stitched up cat who can talk? I want to know more.
Dead Town. This series follows Chan, a classic hard-boiled anti-hero, as he plies his trade in a world overrun by zombies. Visually inspired by the rich black and white style of Touch of Evil and the Maltese Falcon, Dead Town combines film noir with zombie. I was going to say Nambi, which is a whole other, that's noir zombies. He's invented here. Zombie horror genre in an edgy reimagining of the detective thriller. Nambi, you can take that and run with it in Macroverse. You can put that on your covers.
Yeah.
The upcoming release of season 2 of Paul Scheer's action comedy Aliens vs. Parker. This is a unique creator's cut of the Boom series, rewritten and reimagined specifically for Macroverse. It's already out. You can get it right now. And if you want to get on board with the next generation of comics, go download Macroverse today. Available on iOS and Android, you can use our special link to get the app, ifn.by/macroverse, or go to ifnway.com. Click on the link in the post for the show, and you'll find the link to Macroverse. With the app, you get multiple series with free episodes, then it's $4.99 a month for unlimited access to all the great comics, and they got a ton of them. Check them out at macroverse.com or download the app by going to ifn.by/macroverse. Thanks to Macroverse for supporting this episode, and go enjoy the next generation of comics with Macroverse. Nambi. Just Nambi. Take it. Take it, Macroverse. Trademark it. Use it. Noir zombies.
It's very nice of you.
We had 2 Spider-Man books this week.
Yep, we did.
Did you read them?
Yep, I did.
I actually kind of like The Amazing Spider-Man 61. Nick Spencer, Patrick Gleason.
I'm going to have to go back and check a look at it because I don't have much memory of it. But I do know that it started with a couple of images from the previous thing that I stopped reading.
Right.
Yeah, I did like it. It was good. It picked up from the part that I was enjoying.
It felt like pre whatever the fuck that guy's name was story. Like how the book was before that.
Yes,
it
exactly.
It was Kingpin, and it was Boomerang, and it was Nora Winters, and it was J. Jonah Jameson. There was no creepy centipede guy whose name I keep forgetting. Harry Osborn. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was completely sucked in by the all new costume, new era. I was like, sweet, let's do it. And, you know, it was a weird sort of the costume is a weird concept, I think, for Spider-Man, but one that I don't think is entirely inappropriate, even though I find it uncomfortable.
So Spider-Man's broke.
Yes.
He can't make the rent even, and they try making Gog, their little monster pet from the previous issue who broke our heart. They tried making Gog an Instagram star, which he is, but doesn't lead to any money because that's how it works. So the stupid online paper that J. Jonah Jameson works for with Nora Winters gives Spider-Man a lot of money to wear this custom suit that can like live stream his adventures. So he's live streaming his Spider-Man adventures to the world through this suit.
And he's reading out ads.
And he's reading out UUndies, which made me laugh. I just thought this was fun. I thought this was totally a departure from where we've been stuck for the last however long with that last storyline, and I thought this was a lot of fun.
I love how Nick Spencer is like going to stick with these characters from the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. The head of Silvermane is in here. Boomerang's been around the whole time. You know, I admire that commitment. He's like, I got these people here, and I love them, and I'm going to keep using them, and I'm for one, I'm fine with it. I'm cool with it.
I enjoyed it. And so it was interesting. I was expecting to feel the opposite way. Like, I thought, okay, I'm not going to like Amazing Spider-Man. I was like on the fence. Like, you had dropped it. I was like, maybe I'll just drop it. And then I saw Nonstop Spider-Man, number one, from Joe Kelly and Chris Bacciolo. And I thought, well, that might be super fun because Bacciolo's incredible and Kelly did a great run on Spider-Man. And
yeah,
I didn't really like it, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was kind of like, you're going to be, it's going to pulse, we're going to move. And it was just like, all right, just let the work speak. And I think that it delivered what it promised in the way was Chris Bacciolo just drawing this sort of nonstop, you know, Spider-Man's moving the whole time. If you look at the pages, other than a couple of them to sort of give you context, you know, they're all flowing in a certain way. And it visually definitely does the thing that they're talking about. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't know that it really stuck with me in any way. It was like a really cool, abstract concept to sort of look at and go through.
Right.
But not a terribly compelling story.
You know, it was a script littered with like pop culture references, which, you know, it's always like, okay, you're going to date the story. There's a Bridgerton reference.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, like, you're right. It's like, you're older than me, Joe Kelly. Which means you're not connected.
I thought it looked great. I think Bacciolo is incredible. We've talked about it before.
Sure.
And, you know, the conceit that it's this like high-octane, speed-esque story. So the action pages all get tilted to the side, and okay.
I like that as an experiment. Yeah. I like that
Give it a shot.
Yes, I think it's an interesting way to, you know, do something different with the comic book and give it a kind of energy, which, you know, I think that gets the creators engaged and it can give you something fun. And if you look at it like that, it's okay, but I wouldn't be, like, rushing to get the next one.
Oh, I know what the thing that bugged me about it was. He starts talking about people as if I should know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know who they were. Like, he's referencing characters.
Yeah, I was lost.
Kelly. Sorry, Kelly. It's like, who's Kelly? He just keeps talking about some, like, supporting characters. So I guess we're supposed to know who they are, but I don't know who they are.
Right.
He keeps talking about this Kelly person. I don't know who that is.
She's the Robin in Dark Knight Returns.
It just felt like maybe this was taking place in some era of Spider-Man I don't remember. And I'm supposed to know who all these people are he's talking about. He seems to be in college here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if they're referencing characters from that time period. I'm supposed to remember them, but I don't remember them because it was the 60s.
Man, Chris Bacciolo can draw. Anyway.
And there was a backup story. A lot of backup stories this week.
I think that's the thing now.
DC's bringing them back. They're going to try co-features again. This featured Baron Zemo taking over control of Hydra again.
They needed to pick a lane with how Zemo talks.
Yeah.
That was there was bits of Zemo dialogue where I was like, that's not right. Oh, he says, like, he's got like a whole like German arch thing for a little while. And then he says, quote, wow, just I can't even with this. Yeah. And again, that's
no,
don't do that.
No.
Now, on the surface, a group of people who are trying to take Hydra to the next generation and they look like a bunch of corporate lunatics. And then Zemo comes in and kills them all. Okay. That's a good pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. And so, yeah, I can enjoy it on a certain level. But
the panel right before where he says, wow, I can't even with this, was funny. Where he asked the guys, what does Hydra stand for? And no one has the same answer.
Working at a corporation, that there's some truth there.
Right.
You need to nail down your mission statement.
And the thing is, normally in a boardroom scenario, you can't just gun everyone down. But here, Zemo can because he's a Nazi.
Yeah, I have to stop talking about this. Or I'm going to say too much.
So you read Eternals number 3. You were on the fence after 2. Did.
This was the one I liked the best.
Oh,
because I thought that it introduced an element of humor and fun. And I think that that's what the book was missing for me. It was just very serious. And if there was humor, it was extremely dry. Now, I'm not saying it has to be slapsticky. Mm-hmm. But the concept of Icarus sort of finding this random teenager just floating around him.
Because he's a guardian angel.
How weird that is. Yeah. And then I just, all of the bits, you know, with the way that his mother is dealing with it and everything, it was funny. It was unexpected.
Yeah.
It really is it makes you want to, like, what is going to happen next? This is very strange.
So I had a revelation here, because again, don't know much about the Eternals, but was Cersei from the Roger Stern era Avengers an Eternal?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's these characters. I mean, you know, I don't know much about the Eternals either, other than that's Kirby coming back to Marvel and saying, oh yeah, you like the New Gods that Marvel didn't want to do originally. I did over at DC. Well, I'll do them even better here at Marvel. And you get this sort of weird thing. They do not have a space vault, Connor. I also Esad Ribic is great at all the big sort of fantasy crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But so that by contrast makes it really fun to have him like at the breakfast nook.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you read Thor and Loki Double Trouble?
I did. How do you not see a Guri Hero book after the Superman and the Clan book? And
well, that's
say,
exactly why I read it. Mariko Tamaki is the writer. Guri Hero is the artist. And Ariana Maher is the letterer. And this is a YA Superman Loki team up tale.
Thor.
Did I say Superman? Thor
you
and
did
Loki.
Say Superman. Superman.
Superman. Oh, Superman Loki would be a fun team up. It's a YA book, and also it's obviously clearly aimed at people who aren't reading comics every week, so we spend a lot of time introducing who Thor and Loki are to each other and their history, so there's a lot of it like, okay, I know all this, let's go. But I realize it's not for me.
Yeah, and I actually always, I like the different takes on how, every time there's a comic book of them, there's a slightly different take on what their relationship is. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy the ones where they're not necessarily enemies yet, which is I think makes the young.
They're young here. They're young, yeah.
They're
teenagers.
You know, they're trying to do the right thing, and they care about each other to a certain extent. But Loki can't help himself, and Thor can't help himself helping him. And that's a really great dynamic.
Yeah. So Loki tricks Thor because Thor's kind of a dumb oaf into stealing a treasure from Odin's vault, and it's a horn that, and there's a sign that clearly says, "Do not play this." I mean, that's clearly what the sign says, but Loki does not respect the sign. He blows on it, and it calls out the Midgard Serpent, or his sister Mildred, the Midgard Serpent's sister Mildred. But Guri Hero is incredible. I thought this was a beautifully done book. The storytelling is great. The action's great. He does great character work.
Or they are incredible, I believe.
Is it a group?
It's a duo, I think. It's a team of folks.
All right, well, the collective they. Great job. This is a great-looking book. I actually had a lot of fun with it.
Yep, I did too. I had fun. It's why you said we're not the audience for it, but in the right hands, I bet it would be enjoyed. But you know, skilled comic book art is skilled comic book art, and you can appreciate that.
Yeah, and also the expansion of comics that come out on Wednesday, not just for you, maybe for your kids, not your kids, but other people's kids.
Yeah, well, no, they might get to it at some point. Actually, my wife is like, "Are there any comics here on this giant shelf of comics that I can read for them?" And I looked at them all and I was like, "Nope."
Preacher.
It's a lot of Vertigo and yeah, it's no, even the Marvel and DC stuff is not like,
oh, you don't have the Superman Smash the Clan collection. You should get that for them.
No,
they should learn about smashing the clan early.
They should, but
we're in a corner. We haven't been in a corner in a while.
Let's go to Star Wars Corner. And I realized when I put Star Wars Corner in here, I thought, god, we haven't had War Corner for a while. I think we need to really work on the corner stuff.
Well, we forget that Star Wars Corner was a play on War Corner.
Right, exactly.
That was the whole joke originally.
Right.
Yeah, that's why there's
but
a corner.
But then it became a thing. I want to talk right now about Star Wars number 12.
Before you do that, can I talk about the terror that I feel looking down the script and realizing I didn't prepare any powers?
Oh, sure.
It's been a long week, and I was like, oh, shit. So now you can talk about Star Wars.
See, I feel like you're not going to be paying attention to me now. Oh, I just thought of one. Okay, Star Wars number 12. What you have here is it's during the rebellion, post Hoth, pre Jedi, I think.
So the time in which Han is in Carbonite.
Yes.
And Lando's off and Luke is off trying to find him.
Right. So the deal is that Poe Dameron's parents are here working with the Rebellion. And in the last
Martha
issue,
Dameron and...
Martha and Thomas Dameron. Also, that's Leia's mother's name. So, work. And at the end of the last issue, the Martha Dameron crashed her, to save her whole squadron, she crashed her fighter into a Star Destroyer where she is now in hiding in the Star Destroyer. And then back with the Rebel fleet, Thomas Dameron is very upset. And he goes into, you know, like the window that they look out of at the end of Empire?
Yeah, on the command ship, yeah.
Yeah, he goes in to like look out there and he finds Leia in there and she's staring out of it. And, you know, it's like, I come in here to think sometimes. And I was like, oh, that's a nice touch. And, you know, he tells the story of how he met Martha. And we're going with that now because okay. It's much easier than looking it up. You know, and it's fine. It's a little sweet. And then Leia tells him a story about Han Solo because he's like, so what's with that? Because he's not. And I was like, that's very true. He is. That seems unusual. And she, you know, there's this sort of short story within a story of them at Echo Base on Hoth and how he would walk around bitching about how cold it was and how much he hated it all the time. And then when some shit went wrong, he saved everybody, you know, at his own risk. And she's like, that's why I like him. And I thought,
I feel like there's no mystery behind this. The scoundrel with a heart of gold is like,
yeah,
catnip,
I know, but
to every woman I know.
It was a really good story example of that thing. And I thought it very much, it didn't contradict anything.
Sure.
Or ruin anything. It didn't. It just, it was a really nice little bit of you know, fan fiction, mm-hmm. but you know, that worked really well and it fit with the character. And I was impressed by that. And I think that the art by Ramon Rosanas is that kind of Star Wars art that really rides the line perfectly well, mm-hmm. you know, between cartoon and photo. And it was enjoyable. I liked it. Also, I spent some more time on Hoth. I was fine with that.
Hoth is awesome.
I love images of the interior of that base. And like, there was a bit of like, yeah, it was really hard to keep warm. And then the heater broke. And I was like, oh, man, the nuts and bolts of Star Wars maintenance and upkeep. Oh, that's what I show up for every time.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That's the comics we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. We called it the patron pick. And this week, the blowout winner. It wasn't even close. It was never close. Carmen number one from Image Comics. Story and art by Guillaume March. Translated to English by Dan Christensen. Color assists by Tony Lopez. And the letters for Image Comics by Chromatic.
Limited.
This was a Franco-Belgian original graphic novel that is now being serialized in American comics. That's what the history of this is.
I got that sense. I was like, well, this ain't American.
You know what? This is the best Guillaume March art I've seen in ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yep.
I mean, it's Guillaume March is an extremely talented artist who has a very particular stylized style in American comics, but this is a very different Guillaume March, I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of it at first.
I mean, from the art, and not the story.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really good looking. It's very, like, it's non-American in the sense, like, we're just going to have this naked girl in the comic book the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
We are still ripe in our puritanicalism in America, and mm-hmm. so, like, that is an immediate, you know, she's embarrassed about being naked out in the world or whatever.
She's not a supermodel.
No. And
she's a real person with a real body.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what to make of it yet. I kind of enjoyed it, but I'm not sure that I enjoyed it.
Well, the strange thing about it, and I did enjoy it, but it's a little unsatisfying because it's not meant to be read this way. You know, it's not created to be read in 20-page increments. So this issue wasn't structured to be an issue. It was structured to be the first 20 pages of a graphic novel that was read all at once or, you know, however you read it. So it's not like you got like a satisfying chunk.
Well, I don't mind it. I think it worked as a cold open in that way. I thought what didn't work for me structure-wise is that, you know, I go into things apprehensive. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, are you going to be wasting my time here? Or are you going to give me something that is transcendent? You know, like I feel like those are the two extremes. That's all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first thing you see is this sort of abstract art bit with, you know, this, I don't know if it's poetry, but it's, you know, like this transcendental sort of like thought dialogue going through here. And I thought, oh no. And then, you know, then you get to a very human scene of, you know, this is 20 years ago and it's a couple of kids and they're trying not to be late for school. And I actually got a lot done on that page. There's an amazing amount done on that page, by the way.
Catalina and Zisco.
Yeah. And then we go back to this, another sort of these pages. And I thought, please don't do this the whole time. And that was the last one of those pages.
Yeah.
And then we just got into a story with characters that we're hanging out with. And I did have to do a little flipping back and forth. Like, wait, who's that kid?
Oh, well, it did do a good job with it. Basically three pages.
Yes.
In between the weird metaphysical pages. It was like Catalina and Zisco grew up together. They were kids in elementary school. 10 years later, they're in college. Zisco's dating a woman. She's jealous of his relationship with Catalina. And then we jump ahead several years later, and it seems like Catalina and Zisco are in a relationship, but he may or may not be cheating on her with her roommate. And in three pages, we get all of that. Like, yeah, it was very elegantly done.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And then you know, we cut forward to this weird, looks like a girl going to a club date, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very clear what she was, and then we realized, oh, it's like there's a supernatural thing going on here. She's sort of the Grim Reaper character.
She's Death.
But, you know, very charming.
Mm-hmm.
Death. And when we go in, we see Catalina's, you know, she's naked sitting on the toilet and she slit her wrists.
Right.
And for a second, it seems like she's here to save her, you know, but that's not what's happening. Is that she's sort of, we find out she's sort of living in the plane between life and death. And it kind of goes from there. We spend some time there. That's kind of what happens next. And so we don't quite know what's going on. But
yeah, she takes, you know, Catalina out into the world and they're invisible. Unless they touch someone, they'll become visible. Again, this is just the first however many pages of a graphic novel, but it seems like this is her taking her into the afterlife. Because we cut back to the bathroom and she's still in there floating in the tub full of blood. Mm. Again, not having read the whole thing, this is just my assumption. Maybe she'll decide to go back, but it's a lot of blood in that tub.
You know, just as I flip through it, the composition, as you're sort of reading through it, you kind of miss some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bit where she comes out of the door and she's in a stairwell and they go down the stairwell, which is a cutaway of the side of a building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this girl's naked the whole time, but there's actually not any nudity in this book. And so there's always...
No, there is in the book, but not in this page.
Yeah, but not really. Like, it's still like just out of focus or off to the side or whatever. And it's not explicit in a way. It's very like coy.
Yeah, you feel the embarrassment of it. It's like all of our nightmares, right?
Yes.
The incredibly common nightmare that most people have of being naked in public.
Right. So she can't be seen. She's dead, and she's still covering herself up, you know, while she's outside, like she doesn't, which is exactly what it would feel like, by the way.
Yeah.
You would be like, I don't feel comfortable here, even though you know that nobody can see you, which is sort of the depth to which we feel that way. It's gorgeous. And I got to say, it's like a very tiny little detail, but they draw her walking around, and she has... The coloring indicates like a tan line.
Yep.
And I thought that looks great. Like, you know, it's a sexy element, but also just like it's this really subtle thing that.
But it's also real. Like it's like.
Yes.
Like I said earlier, she's an attractive young woman, but with a real body. You know, she's not. She doesn't look like a superhero. The lack of tan lines usually like it's like a sexy thing. You know, like she's a normal person. She's got tan lines. I thought the art really worked.
Yeah, I mean, but she's like, she's real life sexy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's a beautiful drawing. Which I think that he's saying something with. And there's a bit where a man walks by and he picks his nose and you get like a close up of, I don't know, it's just this little humanity moment. And like the nose is very real and the guy's face almost looks like a Dylan drawing now that I'm looking at it. The more I'm talking about it and looking at it, the more I liked it. Just by right now and sort of like an experiment. It felt like to me, it reminded me of Day Tripper, but without being anything like Day Tripper.
Sure. I would love to read this all in one go.
Well,
I'm sort of jumping ahead to our sticking with it part. I think I'm going to stick with it.
Can you get this in one piece?
Probably not in English.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then you've got this. Or you save them all up and read them at once.
Or I wait until Image puts out the collection. But I'll probably read the next issue. I do think this is beautiful, and I do think it's interesting, and I do want to know what happens next.
Yep. I hope it pays off. I don't know anything about, you know, the creator enough to know that I know he draws well, and there's a lot of cool things here, but it's the kind of thing, like, if this pays off, it'll be great. If it doesn't, it'll be a huge disappointment.
Ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings. Out of 5.
4.
4 is correct.
Thank God.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's the thank you patron thing. I might have read it.
Mm-hmm.
I might not have.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Any of your patrons can vote out of the book The Rundown, but if you give it the $5 higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like these four people with very Minefield-esque last names this week.
Oh, I'm excited. I love these kinds of names. Nick Nemphos.
Mm-hmm.
That was an easy one. Let's go
with
that.
You got the easiest one.
Yeah, Nick Nemphos is always paying attention. Even if he doesn't appear to be paying attention, Nick never gets called out. Like when he was in school, he's like, uh-huh. Nick, you paying attention? He's like, yeah, the hypotenuse is 8, bitch. Like, He had an attitude back then. He doesn't act like that anymore.
Right. Back then, he's a teenager, they're assholes.
Yeah, he had a chip on his shoulder. Yeah, yeah. And that was a problem. Uh-huh. But also, he worked it out. He's always paying it. He doesn't miss a beat.
Laser focused.
Not necessarily. He could be doing several things. He could have his divided attention, but he's not going to miss the things that happen.
So he's taking in all the information, even though he may not be.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. He may not outwardly appear to be entirely engaged, but he's not missing anything.
Sure.
You know, he's taking it all in.
Francisco Jarraqui. Jarraqui. Jarraqui? Jarraqui.
Is that a G or a Q?
Q. Is it? I think it's a Q.
No, it's got the... it's got the red line under it, indicating to me that it's misspelled. But that is not.
It's a Q. It's a G. It's a G. Jarraqui. Jarraqui.
Yeah. Jarraqui.
Jarraqui.
Francisco Jarraqui.
I apologize.
So
Francisco.
Sorry, Francisco.
Francisco can do one rep of an exercise, like one push up, and he will get the benefit of doing the optimal number of reps. So one push up, one curl of the bicep, one grip strengthener, but he gets the physical benefit of doing the optimal number.
Okay.
So his workouts are real quick.
And he looks great.
He looks great.
Heiko or Haiko? Heiko. I'm going with Heiko.
Mm-hmm.
Krasinski.
Krasinski.
I know how to pronounce CZY because of our writer Jimsky.
Right.
So I know that the CZ is a ch. So it's Krasinski. Heiko Krasinski is all double jointed.
Everywhere?
All the joint.
Every joint.
Every joint is double jointed. I have one double joint. I have two. It's my thumbs. And I haven't figured out a real use for them. I think it helps in guitar playing. But, Heiko said he had a lifetime to think about. How these double joints can be helpful.
Sure.
Very, very, can bend back very far.
And toes?
Yeah, all of it.
Matt Ryuta? Ryuta?
Ryuta.
Ryuta. Matt Ryuta. I had a power, and it left my brain.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, I know what it was. Matt Ryuta, like the film Dumbo, Matt Ryuta can increase the size of his ears and then flap them like wings and fly. And then he can make them back to normal size. So he can make his ears go big, fly into the air, flappy, 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 land where he wants to go, ears return to normal.
The physics of Dumbo are suspect.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and a little bit. He has the magic feather.
It was not helped by the live-action Tim Burton movie.
I didn't see that one. I haven't seen any of those live-action ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I got kids.
Feather.
Whatever excuse we have to get out there. Yeah, it's a magic feather, whatever.
Yeah. Maybe Matt's got a magic feather. I don't know. But he has the ears.
You're supposed to know. I feel like you're supposed to have the answers for that part.
It's a mystery. That's just for me and Matt.
You know what? I think that you're shirking your patron power duties.
He doesn't have a feather. He just has the ears. They flap and he flies. That's all.
These are all mutants, to be honest. No wizard showed up.
Nick Francisco Heiko. And Matt, thanks for being patrons, patreon.com/ifanboy.
They went to patreon.com/ifanboy, and that's where they supported all these shows that we do, and they did it directly because they cared about it. So they've unlocked Talksplodes, Booksplodes, Mediasplodes, and YouTube content going up there. We have other stretch goals that are going on. Patrons also have the communities that are now flourishing over on the Facebook group and the Patreon Discord server. Fun communities. We try to show up where we can, certainly on Discord. ifanboy.threadless.com, where we have 8 designs that can be put on t-shirts, sweatshirts, bath mats, phone cases, all those things. There's ifanboy.com/support. Where you can just find a PayPal link if you want to support the show, but you don't want to deal with any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate everybody who does all those things. You're the best. You're maybe one of the best parts of our lives for doing that and appreciating what we do so that we don't feel like we're wasting our time here and not just talking to each other to enjoy it, which is fine. But hey, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find a link to Amazon, because when you are stuck at the house, there is nothing better than the trucks coming to give you things that were not there before, at least until the next day when you're like, why did I buy all
this? Get that endorphin hit.
Oh my God, it's so good. You will find a link to buy the books on the Booksplode. You will always find a link to the pick of the week on the show page for Amazon. And the music for the show is always on there as well. And that is it.
Good job. Let's do one email. Zach C. from Texas. Living in a place where I am being permitted to dangerously unmask too soon has got me thinking. What are some of the notable examples of secret identities that were revealed too soon? Are there any that should be taken back that haven't? Or are there any that have been taken back but should have remained revealed.
I'm only thinking of sort of the biggies, so I don't know.
Let's take a step back. I'm very pro secret identities. I don't know that they're out of fashion, but I think they're important to the ethos of comics.
I think that's true, but I do like that there are certain heroes who that's just not part of their thing.
Yeah, there's a couple. I'm not saying everyone, but like...
Yeah, no, yeah.
The Fantastic Four, I think, shouldn't have secret identities. I like that they don't.
What about Steve Rogers?
Steve Rogers is another one. Steve Rogers, Fantastic Four, I'm totally fine with them not having secret identities. I think that's totally fine. There was a while where Wally West didn't have one. That was stupid. They got rid of that. They're always getting rid of Daredevils and bringing it back. You know, obviously the whole Superman debacle, is it still a debacle?
Is that over or is that still a thing?
I don't know. I feel like it must still be a thing.
I'm guessing it is.
They had the cosmic wacky button, so who knows? They couldn't really do anything if they want. They could get rid of it if they want. But I don't know. I just think it's part of the deal. I don't know why it's out of fashion, but I just think it's a mistake.
I think it has a lot to do with the movies and the fact that faces are in them now, and so that's
unfortunately that's a problem. I think that might be right. Like, for instance, I was watching the new Superman TV show, and there's a point where, spoiler warning for that, he has to reveal his identity to his kids, Jonathan and Jordan, and he takes his glasses off, and it's that moment that you have to either buy into or not when you're reading comics, is this man's face changes when he takes his glasses off and suddenly he's Superman. And that's, to me, the magic of comics. And when you lose that bit of wholesome magic, then something is lost in comics. I think it's partially the movies, and I think it's partially we're in this era of entertainment where everything has to be real. Mm. You know, that everyone wants everything to make sense and be real, and it's like, well, I would never not recognize him without his glasses. Yeah, but that's part of the magic and the mystery and the romance of comics. And if you can't get behind that, then I don't know what to tell you. And I think that's, we're losing that.
The best example of that is Christopher Reeve.
Exactly.
And it's one of the things, like, you do have to have your suspension of disbelief. But man, the way that his posture and bearing changed when he went from one to the other, mm-hmm. is just, it was such a thing of beauty. And it's a perfect example of what you're talking about, that actually the comics don't do as well. Because comics have this thing of drawing Clark Kent as a big strapping, you know, stud boy. And it's like, well, of course, look at him. Like, but put big frumpy clothes on him.
Only time I've seen that is in Superman for All Seasons, when Tim Sale made him like this big kind of oafy, dopey guy. And then
Gary Frank did like a Christopher Reeve Clark Kent.
Yeah,
I remember as well. That one and Bruce Wayne are sort of, and Peter Parker. Those are the ones, like, don't fuck with those.
Right.
I think those need to be there. The Daredevil thing is interesting because I think that the danger of it is part of the character's mystique, but they've gone to the well so many times that it doesn't... It's become part of his mystique that, like, sometimes everybody knows and sometimes everybody doesn't. We make it forget. And so it's not exciting or interesting anymore. But, like, there was a time where, I don't know, killing somebody was, you know, like, oh. And there was a time where, like, them losing their secret identity was a really big deal. But you can't kill Gwen Stacy over and over again. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that over and over again, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it's part of the danger of the storytelling, right? It's like their family and friends, or will they find out, or, you know, trying to desperately keep her identity secret is part of it. And
if I may counterpoint it, I think that there is a certain element of the storytelling where, like, you don't really want to deal with that all the time. And so you kind of just don't. I think Green Lantern's an example of that. Like, he's got a secret identity. I don't think everybody knows it, but they don't really worry about it so much.
Right.
You know, like, for the most part, he's kind of a bachelor, and he's not hiding or protecting anybody. Sometimes it comes in and out, you know, but he can have a secret identity and it doesn't matter. Like, I don't want that to be his story, but it is a big part of Peter Parker's story. It is a big part of Matt Murdock's story.
Yeah, for certain characters, it's more important than others. But I think, I just think there's a push to remove all the magic from comics, I think, in certain ways. And I think that's a mistake.
Of everything. Everything has to be explained and understood. And the backstory has to be in fan theories and blah, blah, blah. And there's not enough, you know, of, you know, the Grant Morrison thing, which is just...
There's a romance to the fact that the little domino mask will hide your identity, or that a pair of glasses will hide your identity. I mean, that's just... Get on the train or don't, is my feeling.
You go find that... I mean, is it Superman 2 that he reveals himself to Lois? That's not 1, it's 2.
Yes, it's 2.
Go find that clip, man, and watch him reveal himself to Lois. And also, like, the idea, like, when
In 1 is the one where he struggles with it. He wants to. And so he's that scene where he keeps taking him off and putting him back on and changing his posture while she's in the other room. That's in 1. I don't know if that's...
You know, there's another one of those in Batman 89.
Yeah.
When he's trying to explain to Vicki Vale. That's the best.
You know, some people get up in the morning and they have breakfast and they... say goodbye to someone and they go somewhere. And
how much is that not Batman, but also fantastic?
Why doesn't Michael Keaton have 15 Oscars?
That's a good question.
Anyway, I'm very, very, very pro them. Yes. Again, except for like Fantastic Four, Steve Rogers, totally okay. And there's certain characters. It's like marriage. Like, I'm anti-comic characters getting married and having kids, except for the Fantastic Four and other characters. And for some, they're designed that way, and others, they're not. You know, this is, to me, taking away secret identity is a major, major character change that shouldn't happen. Especially for Superman. I don't understand it. I don't understand why they did it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I do understand, like, after 60, 70 years, like, what happens if we do this?
Sure.
I get that as an experiment. And, you know, it doesn't have to be permanent in comics, and that's okay, but that didn't feel like it added a lot to the story.
It didn't add anything positive. And the thing is, they just hit the cosmic wacky buttons, theoretically. So theoretically, they could do away with it. Now we don't know. We just read a Superman comic. It wasn't a factor, so who knows?
Well, then the other thing that happens is you end up with this thing afterwards where they try to live their normal lives. Like, he was still going to work as Clark Kent. And he's like, no, that's over.
Right. Yeah.
He can't go to the office now. Like, that's not how celebrity works.
The insurance liability alone.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no. I mean, maybe you can work from home and do it. But, like, at that point, like, nothing he does as a reporter is going to get read or matter or anything. You know, like, you can't, like, this is a bad example, but, like, Steven Seagal as a police officer doesn't work because he's Steven Seagal. Well,
Shaquille O'Neal is like a deputy.
Yes, exactly.
Like, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to be effective at that thing anymore. Because everything is overshadowed by it. As much as you might want to be a normal person and do it, it wrecks it.
Don't work.
Shaquille O'Neal should get a secret identity, and he should wear glasses and be all hunchy. And then see if he can get away with being a police officer then.
Contact@ifanboy.com. Thanks for writing in, Zach from Texas. That was fun. Discussion.
That was fun.
Yeah.
All right. You may remember, if you're a listener who's been hearing my excuses about Talksplodes, I got good news for you. One episode back in the feed from here, so earlier, I mean, provided everything has gone the way it should, there will be an interview with Joshua Williamson. I have a very difficult time saying the word Joshua, oddly enough, because I don't ever call myself that. And Joshua Williamson, who you knew from a very long run on Flash of 5 years, and he's headlining the Infinite Frontier series that is going to be coming out soon. And he's also wrapping up Birthright, which has been one of the rare late Image boom books that's actually finishing. Got all the way through it.
Yeah.
I talked to Josh for about an hour. I've known him for a very long time. And always a good talk with him. And then next week, this week coming up, there will be another Talksplode with Ibrahim Mustafa, an artist and now writer. So a sort of full package deal. And he has a series of graphic novels coming out from Humanoids. And the first one is a sci-fi adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo. And that will be out this upcoming week. And we're going to talk to him then. Great guy.
Back-to-back Talksplodes. Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Yeah. That one, I will give a shout-out to a longtime listener, Dave Carr. He's like, why don't you talk to Ibrahim? And I was like, oh, yeah, I know him. That's a really good idea. And it didn't occur to me, so I did. And then I got to talk to Ibrahim for the first time. I was very happy about that.
Cool.
He was a breakdancer, a semi-professional breakdancer. So there's a teaser you didn't expect.
And then later this month, I know we only have like 3 more weeks in the month, and 2 of them are Talksplodes, but the week after, we should have a media splode. Topic unknown. We haven't even talked about it. We don't even know what we're going to be talking about. And then the week after that, probably technically speaking, coming out the first day of April will be the Booksplode for this month. And I don't know if we revealed it last week or not, but we're going to talk about Avengers West Coast Vision Quest. John Byrne's first arc on West Coast Avengers. And it's a fairly important Vision story, and I'm very excited.
Is issues 42 to 50.
It's not a super long run, so you can totally get ready for that.
The reason I said that you could go find those issues, you could download them, or you could find the collection. There's a collection on Comixology like that, and the book exists as well.
Vision Quest. And that's coming out later in the month. And then also we have a Patreon hangout March 20th. So there's a lot going on this month. It's a very busy month. And we thank everyone who listens to all the shows.
All those shows are located at ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows, our vast history of comic book writing and videos and all that stuff is its home is there. You can like, facebook.com/ifanboy or follow at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can keep up with sort of what the pick of the week is. You can find the best of the week in panels when those are there on Instagram. You can follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. That is as much social media presence as we've allowed ourselves to have at this point.
It's the healthiest amount.
You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. We would like the likes and the subscribes. And there you will find some, we're going to call them vintage iFanboy video shows.
Vintage.
Up there. Vintage.
12
out
years
of
ago.
Date.
12 years.
We used to say, let's make these evergreen, which now, not really possible.
I mean, a lot of them are evergreen, but not of
yes,
them are not evergreen.
More so than this show, certainly. But, you know. It's the world.
That is actually bears out. The evergreen shows get way more views than the non-on. So like the ones where we talk about just like random collections of books or things, people watch those as opposed to like an interview at a con from 2008.
Yes, absolutely. This past week, there's a new comics preview from a pool in Los Angeles when we were in town to interview Stan Lee, which is what I consider to be the high point of anything I did with that video show was that day.
Yeah, so if you want to see Ron and I... splashing around in a pool talking about new comics, that's the mini for you.
Ron and Sonia interviewing Mike Allred, and more comic book voicemails on the other show.
It's funny, you know, these are shows from 12 years ago. We did produce them, but like, you know, I was preparing the Mike Allred show and I was like, whoa, we did this? I don't remember this. It's a long time ago. I don't remember a lot. I remember a lot of these shows, but I don't remember a lot of these shows. I didn't remember Ron and Sonia interviewing Mike Allred, but they did. Finally, if you like the show, please write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast aggregator you use. Maybe you don't use Apple Podcasts, but if you don't, please consider leaving a rating and a review. It helps people find the show, and that's for any podcast you listen to. It's the least you can do. I'm not calling you out, but, you know, it's the least you can do to help your favorite podcast. We do it for all the shows we like. Hopefully you do it for the shows you like. That's a good thing to do. Even better than that, word of mouth, tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your kid, tell your letter carrier.
I love the phrase letter carrier. It's I don't know, mailman feels very letter carrier. I think it's a letter.
It's elegant.
Nice.
It's elegant.
Well, you want a letter. You don't necessarily want mail.
Tell the people who give you your vaccine. You know, while you're getting it, just say, hey, I don't know if you listen to podcasts or not, but check
bring
out
them coffee. Do some.
And then give them a coffee and a recommendation.
Or a donkey's cod. You know, you let them pick it out. Maybe they don't want it. You get them a donkey's cod 5'10". You know, whatever. You know, they deserve it. They're working hard out there.
That's this week's show, ending on a lovely note like that. And my name is Connor.
Mike Sullivan down Dorchester. I'm going to get out of here, kids. Wash your hands. Stay safe. Wear your masks out there. What are you, fucking stupid? Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now. I've been feeling it since 1966 now.